Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Hi friends, the world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about Critters 4, a movie that I picked. Another part 4 equals things in space type movie.
Hell yeah.
But I will always argue that Critters at least make sense because their origins are from space.
Are you trying to say that Hellraiser Bloodline does not make sense? Because I'm going to quit the show if you say that.
That's basically what I'm saying.
Sorry, we just offended Alan Smithy, so sorry.
I watched the Blu-ray that I have of this.
Fuck.
Because I got the Scream Factory Critters box set that had all four movies on a beautiful Blu-ray restoration, which also came with a making-of movie that has a bunch of really great interviews. It's like a 20-minute making-of Critters 4, and what I learned about this movie was that the Chiodos brothers are not very proud of it.
What a shock.
Apparently the funding started to dry up real fast around this movie, and they were like, they had all these visions for like what would happen with these critters when they're like exposed to stuff in this outer space lab or whatever. And then it was just like, we were able to make about 2 baby crates and that's about it. We didn't really get to do anything we wanted to do with this one.
You know, Horror Movie Night is giving me a lot of firsts. this is my first Critters movie.
Wait, really? Wait, first Critters at all?
At all.
Wow.
At all. Like, I'm familiar. I know what they look like.
It's mostly uphill from here. So. Yeah.
Well, I feel that. I feel that that has to be true. It can't not be true. But like when those baby critters first arrived, I was like, oh no, are they going to be like that the whole time? Because I was like, that's not the critters that I remember at all. Luckily, we figure out that that's not the case. But yeah, this was my first Critters movie.
That still is mind-blowing to me. Just really, I don't know. It's kind of
mind-blowing to me too. I don't pride myself on anything in particular, but I think that I watched a fucking couple of movies here and there, and somehow Critters has just not been on my radar.
Here's the thing with Kyle that blows my mind, though. Like, Kyle, I've talked to you about movies for going almost a decade now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how long ago you were promoting Phantasm, but it was that long ago.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Jesus Christ.
You it'll be 10 years. I would have gone into production in 2012, yeah.
There you go. So, wow.
Mind-blowing.
You have had some of the most... Like, you and I have talked about some of the most deep-cut, like, obscure bullshit that I've ever had conversations with any other human where I'm like, I don't know any other person who knows that this movie exists. But then I also know that you've only seen like three of the Friday the 13th movies. Correct. Like ever in your life.
Correct. Yeah. I have a very niche interest.
Giallo, you've seen every single one of them. Fucking, you know, like.
Yeah, I just got this forgotten Giallo. I got this. No, right? I think you're right because I'm not sure if I've seen anything past. I've seen New Nightmare and the remake, but I've not seen.
You've seen the remake, Freddy's but you Dead. Haven't seen Freddy's Dead. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
I saw the remake in theaters.
And man, I know that people fight about this movie all the time, but if there was ever a fucking movie that I had faith Kyle would fucking love as much as I do, it's Freddy's Dead. That movie is insane in all of the ways that Kyle likes a movie.
I'll get there.
I mean, he's only been on the show as a full time host, like for what? Like 3 months now? 4 months? Like
2-3 months? Yes.
Yeah, so
this continuing horror education that y'all are providing me is wonderful, and I'm honored. And I'm so happy that we got to watch Critters 4 all together.
Yeah.
The best part is that like we made him watch Nocturna. Rocks. But
That is like a full wine bottle. What is that?
I couldn't find anything proper from space but Moon Rocks from Oxbow.
Guys, I couldn't find a beer, so I brought a bottle of wine.
Fuck it, dude. I almost did for another movie. I almost couldn't find anything with a logo, but Bacardi has a logo that would have worked. And I was just like, oh, I got to figure out a fucking rum drink. I didn't. We're good. But
so I've got some cool news for you. So you've seen all of Critters 4, but you've also seen the last 5 minutes of Critters 3 in this watch. Because to save some budget, the opening scene is literally the closing scene from Critters 3, just repurposed.
You know, it reads that way, too.
That's the only one I haven't seen, and I was going to message you guys and be like, do you think that I should, like, watch a Critter, like, Critters 3 and you know, like, really just get into it? And No. After I watched Critters 4, I was like, no, that's fine.
Save Critters 3 for in, like, 2 or 3 years when I make us watch Critters 3.
Yeah.
Which is only noteworthy because it's Leonardo DiCaprio's first movie.
Okay, so I have seen Critters 3. I don't remember anything from it, but I definitely have seen Critters 3 because I thought Critters 3 was Critters 1 when I first watched it. It's because I remember Leonardo DiCaprio. Maybe I haven't seen Critters 1. I don't know.
The Critters movies are kind of insane. They follow the model of the Ghoulies movies very similarly, honestly, you just need part two.
Yeah.
Like, part one sets up the characters, but it's kind of, Then part two is like they figured out the characters and they perfected everything. And then part three is like way too goofy. And then part four is just a mess.
When does the Critters Ball come into
two.
Play?
Two.
That's
which
two.
Is arguably one of the best twos out there. In my opinion, it's like it's up there with Slumber Party Massacre 2. I've had this conversation with my buddy Mario multiple times, and I think I've mentioned it to Matt too, where there is this kind of vein that goes through a lot of the 80s horror movies in particular, where the second one in a franchise is the best. Like, Nightmare on Elm Street is a misnomer, but think about it. Or we could even expand to say that it's significantly better than 1. Because, like, if we say that 2 is the best of the series, then we have to discount Friday the 13th. But if we just say that it's significantly better than the first one, we can add Friday the 13th to it. But Prom Night 2, Hello Mary Lou, is so much better than Prom Night. Critters 2, so much better than Critters. Slumber Party Massacre 2, so much better than Slumber Party Massacre. Ghoulies 2, there are a lot. And I feel like this show is pretty much my thesis to that. You know, the whole thing is like this. Number 2 is always better. Oh, and Carrie 2. The Rage, Carrie 2. That's another one on my list. I can't say Fly 2 is better than The Fly, but it also has the same kind of silliness that you are going for with a sequel to a seminal work. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, same thing. TCM is much darker than TCM 2.
Yeah, you get into even the greats like that, like you're saying. I mean, when you get the Texas Chainsaw like land, then you can, there's people who argue Scream 2 is better. You know, there are those people who appreciate that. Some people like, I don't think anybody likes Hellraiser 2 better, but they like rank them very closely. You're right, there's a goofiness to part 2s that happens too, that is lighter, but you are still in that world.
I feel like a good part 2 is kind of why I do argue that like Dream Warriors is like a perfect sequel, even though that's a part 3. It's a perfect sequel because it takes all of the stuff that's been established and just cranks it up a little bit more. That's all you really need to do with a horror sequel, is like, you don't have to retread new ground. Dream Warriors even does add a little bit more to Freddy's mythos, which really not necessary at all, but like right. It's there. But like, it's just like, hey, remember when you loved watching these weird nightmare sequences in that first movie? It's about to get fucking weirder because we don't have to explain any of this shit anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's like, same thing with Ghoulies and Critters. Like, we already did a full movie explaining what these critters are. Like, we're just gonna let these critters fucking run wild on Easter.
It is arguably the only Easter horror movie.
All right, well, let's talk about part 4 for just a little bit.
Oh yeah, we might want to do that.
We're singing praises of part 2s, but yeah.
but we get into this. So I feel like there's two sides to this movie for me. There's the one side of the movie that is the tractor beam CGI, where it's just like, holy shit, this movie had no budget that, whatsoever.
Do you know what that was?
Because that's old footage.
That's
right?
Footage they're from like Android 1982, because they were running out of money. And then Critters 2 has interspliced a scene at the end of Ugg's ship. I didn't notice it, but I noticed very obviously that. So this came out in 1990 or 88. What is it?
92.
Because they were cranking these out every other year for 8 years. So this was like,
yeah.
Since it was the fourth one, you know, like it'd been 8 years since the first one, but it's very obvious when they're using 10-year-old CGI, you know, interspersed with. Now, I don't think that the special effects are great in this movie, but there's some fun stuff to be had. I don't think this movie is that bad. I really don't.
No. I think it's a perfectly fine movie, but it's definitely nowhere near the other movies in quality. I used to hate this movie a lot more than I hate it now, because I actually think that some of the ways that people die in this movie are way more horrifying than they've ever felt in any of the other Critters movies. And that's what I was going to get to, is like the character of Rick, he dies and it's like, it's a very goofy.
Oh, Crite in the mouth?
Yeah, like a Crite jumps into his mouth and it's kind of comical that he's just got this critter in his mouth.
With a little kicking feet.
Then it's, with a little kicking feet, like it's comical, but then it's also like you're seeing the critter from the inside of his mouth just chewing apart at his innards inside of his mouth,
yeah,
for certain
shots.
Yeah,
it's a bad way to go.
And eyes are bulging out as he's like reaching out for help, like desperately. Like it's like, it's this weird juxtaposition of something very comedic being taken so seriously that it actually is slightly unsettling.
Yeah. Well, you also know that it's a terrible way to go, because the Crites taste awful.
Yes.
It's like dying with a disgusting sewer rat in your mouth. It's just a terrible way to go. Also, that kill reminded me very much of the kill in Phantasm 2 when a guy gets one of the orbs in his mouth. And then it goes through his body and comes out his back. You remember that scene?
Yeah, and another movie to add to your thesis.
Yeah, that's up there. That's a crown jewel in the thesis.
Wow.
Also, Eric Dare, I want to say that's how his name is pronounced. I'm pretty sure that none of us will get it right, though, so I'm just going to take the L on that.
Do it.
But he was just in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
Yes, he was.
So,
same haircut.
Same fucking haircut.
One of my favorite moments that he does is when he's taking all of the medication from the pharmacy.
Oh, the candy raid?
There's absolutely a tray of ibuprofen that he throws into. Like, it is that maroon-ish dye that is only on ibuprofen, and there's a tray of it that he throws into his drug bag.
And it's looked like that for 30 years.
Yeah. And then, I think it was his death, that after they find him, they find the footprints from the critters, mm-hmm. and they go, still wet footprints. I was like, yeah, dude, we all know that it just happened. Like, of course the footprints are, like they're like, oh, a clue, still wet. Motherfuckers, you were just talking to him. Like, you just told him to get out of there.
They are not detectives, okay?
Time and space is so weird. We are literally closer right now to 2045 than to 1992. Yeah. And if that was 2045, that we got fucking big problems, man. It's fucked up.
The feet on the wall is like one of the things that I have remembered about this movie from the very first time I watched it. Because honestly, the way that I've watched the Critters movies for years before I actually like bought them was that they played on Sci-Fi Network constantly. And there'd be like Critters Week, where it'd be a different Critters movie every night.
But there are only four.
They're not going to waste a Friday slot on a Critters movie.
Wait, no, it's sci-fi. They're going to waste a slot on anything, all right?
Well, we certainly can't interrupt the fucking Friday night Twilight Zone marathon, so the movies have got to be four-parters Monday through Thursday. Fair, I remember watching this on TV, and like the Critters movies, for the most part, you know, you got some boobs in part two, but all things considered, like, probably a great call for something like Sci-Fi, because I don't think there's that much editing that needs to be put into getting this to be television ready.
Yeah, not like you doing the entire Friday the 13th series.
But yeah, so like I think that that scene always stuck in my memory. I always remembered that, them walking into the room with all the feet marks everywhere. And that was like, for the longest time, I was like, that's the only death in this movie. That's all I remembered. Then I was watching, I'm like, man, a lot of fucking people die in this movie, and I did not remember any of them.
Well, and we're really missing out on two really big things here. Brad Dourif and Angela fucking Bassett are in this movie. Like, how did they pay for their salaries? How did they pay for Angela Bassett?
Because they didn't pay the Chiodos brothers for special effects.
Yeah, okay, all right. We have to kind of flesh out the, I don't want to say plot, but kind of like the subplot. Because the plot is literally just Kreitz on a spaceship, you know? But there's this subplot where the galactic,
well, there's the
FBI
bounty hunters group that like Charlie's a part of, right? And Charlie's kind of your one through line throughout all these movies is Charlie and Ugg. Charlie in the first movie is the town drunk, but he finds a new lease on life by hunting Kreitz, right? So part three does end with there being the two last eggs and him getting ready to destroy them and finally end this. And that's when he's told, you know, hey, as much as we're bounty hunters, we cannot cause the extinction of a creature, so we're going to take these two eggs and, you know, you're going to be basically frozen with them and they'll live in some cryosphere in space or whatever. They get intercepted by a spaceship of a bunch of just, like, I don't know, fucking space pirates? I don't know what the hell they're up to.
Yeah, let's just call them space pirates. It's close enough.
Space pirates.
Space pirates pull them in. And, A, Charlie finds out that 50 years have passed. Takes this in stride. Really, no emotional beats to be seen on that whole thing.
Well, the great line that bridges that, because there is no emotional beat, but he just goes, oh, I'm in space, aren't I? Like, he does seem upset, but he's like, if that's the answer, then I don't need any other explanation. I just need to know I'm
there
in space.
There we go. But then the other thing that we find is, while Charlie has been in his cryo status or whatever for 50 years, Ugg has kind of turned evil, which is a really weird twist to just suddenly be like, hey, this character that you all know and love from the first three movies, yeah, he's a fucking asshole now. And then, yeah, it basically just turns into this bounty hunters don't... It's basically the plot of all of the Alien movies. Like, someone in charge doesn't want to kill the creature. They want the creature to stay alive. And the people who are being killed by the creature are like, no, we got to kill the creature.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they're also trying to mutate... So there's this, like, shadow organization. That's why I'm saying, like, the space FBI or whatever. But there's this shadow organization that has these plans to mutate a creature so that they can drop it on a planet and it will clear a planet of all life or something like that, so that they can, like, I don't know, have the planet to themselves. It was very convoluted. And
that Boglin looking thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's it's kind of
special
the
effects.
One.
Yeah. Well, isn't that kind of like the premise
of Alien?
Premise for the lack of a term, but like,
it's the
isn't
premise
that like
of
what's going on with
Prometheus.
Like with Piranha? You know what I mean? Like, in Piranha, it wasn't like the whole thing like, oh, these piranhas were genetically engineered to be extra hungry for, like, World War II, that we could send them into, like, whoever's water supply and it would deplete the food and the whatever. Like, there's always some stupid thing. The way that they try to turn creatures into weaponized things in movies is always so fucking convoluted.
You know, it's so true, and goddamn, it reminded me of this movie that we had to watch when we were doing Reddit Horror Club that I just hated so much. Do you remember Revenant?
Yes. I remember nothing about it, but I know that we watched it.
That was the same plot, was that they were like, oh, well, and I feel like that was the same plot in fucking Return of the Living Dead, was that the army was, oh, we'll just have, or maybe it was, oh, no, it was Return of the Living Dead 3, where they were putting, like, the mech suits on them or whatever, like those exoskeleton suits, and they're like, oh, we'll just drop zombies into the enemy territory, they'll just eat their way through our enemies. It's such a stupid fucking concept, and that's like the sleeper version of It Was Only a Dream, but that's almost like too on the nose to say, you know, but it's like the backup. If you can't come up with a reason for people doing dumb shit in your movie, and you're like, man, It Was Only a Dream is just, it's just too overplayed. Let's have this be a bioweapon. And then they're like, fucking, here's $50,000, make your movie. You know, it's ridiculous.
Right, right. Yeah. It does feel like an easy go-to for an explanation. You're absolutely right. It's very easy to just be like, oh, a greater power in the world is trying to use it for evil or for power or whatever. And it's just like, oh, okay, well, isn't fucking everything? Isn't everybody? Like, can we do something more creative?
No, we can't when we got critters.
Not critters for it.
So I watched this movie probably at least 2 weeks ago. So I don't remember why I have the quote, "You're not my father" in all caps, but I guess that's a quote that happens at some point in this movie.
Yeah.
But I want to show... Here, I'll show this to you guys because this blew my mind. And this has nothing to do with the movie Critters 4 per se. But I don't know if we want to say give an applause or what. But the wiki plot summary is 15 paragraphs long.
For Critters 4?
Plot summary for Critters 4.
Why did I even watch the movie then?
Why did we do this? What was the point?
How long read that Critters... in less time than it takes to...
Yeah. Do you think all the Critters one, like Critters movies plot?
Let me see. Let me see. Let me check. Let me check to see if...
Well, while Critters, Matt does Critters that, I got to tell you guys three. That Critters 3 and Critters 4 were filmed simultaneously, which is kind of mind-blowing and hilarious.
No shit.
Critters 3 was one paragraph.
And that's the one with Leo Dico? Come on.
Critters 2, 3 paragraphs. So I was like, Critters 4 may have taken more paragraphs than all three of these films combined.
That's bizarre.
Let's see. And
do you
and
really...
5 paragraphs for Critters, the original. So yeah, someone wrote 15 paragraphs on Critters 4, while Critters 1 through 3 could be summarized in...
That's 8.
Nine paragraphs.
Nine paragraphs, yeah. 5, 1, 3.
That's honestly, that's fucked up.
Justice for Critters 2. New hashtag.
That can only be explained by somebody who is similar to me, but not me. Who's like,
sure, man,
loves Critters 4, has been so sick of people shitting on Critters 4 that they're like, God damn it, this movie's a masterpiece, and I'm going to make sure that the plot outline on Wiki is so detailed that nobody could point any flaws in this premise.
Is that why you showed us, Matt? Are you just really proud?
I put a lot of work into this page, guys. No, I only know that it was 15 paragraphs because, yeah, I used it a couple times to keep track of what was happening.
Like, there are some like big jumps and gaps that sort of happen. I missed the part where they just ended up in that new area where they spend the rest of the movie, and I was like, where the fuck are we? They shoot the same hallway for the last half hour of the movie, just in different angles as people run through the hallway. And I'm like
Critters 4 might trick you into thinking it's a movie that you could passively watch and like do other stuff, but man, you miss one line or one transitional scene, and you're like, how the fuck did we get here?
Yeah, truly. All those things happen very quickly and with no hand-holding. They just drop you in the fucking pond, dude.
So, you know what? I salute whoever made that wiki page. Great work.
Thank you, and thank you.
I don't know. This is outrageous. I wrote down best space sequel at one point, but it's also my second note, so I think I was real early into putting my cards on the table there.
That is so on brand for you.
But I'm like, it's still better than like Leprechaun in Space. I would watch Critters 4 over Leprechaun in Space.
No, but I just
you like your Hellraiser 4, but even you only like it for the period piece portion of that movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now like, I just have to rewind for a second. And
also, Jason X sucks. I'll say it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And if anybody picks that as their devil feature, they're booted off the show until next week. Here's the thing that I need to point out about Matt Kelly is Matt Kelly being like, oh, my second note was saying I'm in love with this movie. That's Matt dating.
Yep. Second text message, I know that it's love.
My second note is Brad Dourif looks like he's in a prog rock band. So if that's...
I think we've said all we can say about
Critters 4. I think that we did more than 15 paragraphs worth of work on Critters 4. Hey.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
So Matt, why don't you tell us what your double feature would be with Critters 4?
So I have no memory on if this is a good movie or a bad movie, but it is a movie that I know I've watched because it's a movie that I passed the box art constantly at Blockbuster and was like, I am going to rent this. And I know nothing else about it. Like, I know I watched it, can't remember anything else. It was a movie called Within the Rock. That's what I'm going to match it up with. It's just another space movie. They basically find, I think they find a monster inside of, like, a meteorite. And it just starts wreaking havoc on a spaceship.
I'm going to go Creepazoids. Ooh. I think that it's a much, I mean, it's still really bad. But it's still a fun, and if I remember correctly, like, does take place in space, but it's much more serious. When I say more fun, I mean more fun to watch. The tone of the film is much more serious.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that where Critters 4 didn't do it for me was that it was trying to be funny and but was completely unfunny and then was really tame in a lot of ways. And I just think Creepazoids, I want somebody to take the shit way too seriously and that I can have more fun with it. Like, if there's more, like, if there's too much, like, tongue-in-cheek shit, and it's Critters 4, so, like, they have, like, you know, a lead-up and a story and a baseline. But it was also my first viewing of any Critters thing, and it just fell flat for me. Not that Creepazoids is going to be that much better, but I want something tonally completely different, but visually similar.
I was like, which movie is Creepazoids? And so I Googled it, and apparently, so that movie came out in 87, starring Linnea Quigley, and just 10 years later, they remade it as Hybrid in 1997. So maybe you could triple feature. If I was being real smarmy, being real shit, I would be like, let's watch Vicious Lips again.
I was thinking you might say that. Yeah. Dude. I was thinking that. Yeah, fuck.
But if we have to go with another movie that starts with V and I that isn't Vicious Lips, I would go with Virus, which is also a movie on a spaceship. And it has a shitload of special effects, which we're missing from Critters 4. So that might salvage the evening a little
bit. With Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not...
I have the novelization in Horror Finds.
Oh, hey, everybody, go check out Horror Finds and Etsy, and you can buy the novelization of Virus.
Virus?
Yeah. Don't all purchase it at once.
Yeah, I only have the one copy.
Yeah, first come, first serve situation.
I upcharge. Use the coupon code HNNPodcast and you'll get charged $10 extra.
So, Matt, time for a what did we watch?
So, I checked out this movie the day that it was added to Netflix. I put it on my watch list. I've talked about this before. Like, I have stuff on my watch list and they kind of fall into the buckets of like stuff that I want to really pay attention to. So I need to save them for like when I don't have any work going on and then like nonsense background noise while I'm doing other shit. And this was firmly in the like, I want to dedicate time to this one. So it took me almost 2 months to finally sit down and watch it. But it's actually a really cute movie called Mixtape. Came out last year. It dropped on Netflix in December or like late November. And it takes place in the 90s. I want to say it's like 1997 or 98. But it's this little girl. Her parents died in a car crash when she was young. And she lives with her grandmother. And her grandmother kind of keeps a lot of the stuff about her parents kind of secret from her. This girl's like in seventh grade, we'll say. And she's in the basement and she finds a mixtape that her parents made. And she puts the mixtape in her Walkman and it eats the tape. But she has the track list. So it's her going on an adventure to track down all of the songs that are on the mixtape so she can rebuild it and like learn more about her parents through it. And it's very funny, very sweet, very charming. Clearly a super low budget movie. Like, it's starring one of the actresses from Modern Family, plays the grandmother. But beyond that, and the only other name that I knew was Nick Thune, who's a comedian, plays the record store owner who like builds a nice relationship with her. But very like punk rock soundtrack. Like, the parents are definitely depicted as like people who would have went to like CBGBs. So it's like songs by like the Stooges that she's trying to track down, or like rare Knack singles and stuff like that. Definitely really fun, great soundtrack, really sweet.
So I'll go next, and I want to just do, so I mean, I have two quick things to talk about, and I will make them both short. So Witcher season 2, I finished it. It's just so fun to watch. I don't think it was as satisfying in the end as season 1, just because I like spectacle, and there was, I felt like there was a little bit more talking. So it felt, in the season itself, but specifically the last two episodes, and there's more espionage in it and shit that felt too Game of Thrones for me. And everybody knows I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, but I definitely fucking love the monsters in Witcher. It was worth the watch. I'm ready for season 3, obviously. Good time. That's no revelation. But something that I wanted to mention that may be a surprise to people, they may not have noticed it, kind of flew under the radar a little bit, was this very interesting concept that Shudder released, which is called The Runner. Do you guys know about this?
Carly was just listening to Boy Harsher upstairs. Okay. If anybody could somehow hear it. But I have not watched it yet, but I'm very eager to. So, and I'm eager to hear what you think.
I feel like it's a very Kyle project. Now, for the uninitiated, it's a short film, long music video. It's really the only way to explain it. And it's basically a compilation of 4 or 5 music videos, I want to say, from Boy Harsher, and a story of a murderous young woman. It's a pretty cool concept. I thought that it was very ballsy. I don't know if Shudder bankrolled it or if they just picked it up after it was bankrolled, but I love when Shudder takes chances like that, you know, and I feel like Shudder takes more chances like that than pretty much any other streaming service right now. I mean, of the ones that I know, because it's already a niche, like a genre-based streaming service, and they're putting their money behind something that is really out of the norm, which I love, because, like, how many people are out there, or how many services are out there like, yeah, we're gonna, like, sponsor at least, or have an exclusive 38-minute music video compilation.
Right.
It was very refreshing. Obviously, it's more about the music and visuals than there's no plot. Like it's supposed to make you feel. It's not supposed to make you think. I went along for the ride, and I'm not necessarily going to go out and become the biggest Boy Harsher fan. I just thought that it was such a cool concept, and it looks beautiful as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that Shudder does, too, is, like, you're absolutely right. Like, they are willing to do that, and then their audience, most of their audience, is willing to watch it. Like, somebody, like, there's a viewer and producer or distributor trust that Shudder has cultivated, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and even if it's not all hits, you know, I think when it's, like, things like the Creepshow show or they did the Behind the Monsters, it's like people are at least willing to take a chance on that stuff, even if it doesn't land for them. And I think that, like, and the Boy Harsher thing is obviously it's a one-off, so people are probably more willing to take a chance on that.
And it was less than an hour long, so it's like very very low stress kind of thing. It's not like a full movie. There's a 3.5-hour documentary that I really want to watch on Shudder, but it's like I can't dedicate that time right now, you know? Yeah. And so it's gonna sit in my queue for about 3 months. But that's the other side of the coin, is that I think Shudder is really, you're absolutely right about the fact that Shudder and the viewer have like a contract and there's trust there. And that's just what makes the service great. If I don't watch anything on Shudder for 2 months, I don't feel bad, because I still feel like my money is going towards a good cause. It's still a donation. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't spend I didn't watch $7 worth of content on Shudder this month. I'm not upset about it.
Kyle, how about you? What did you watch or check out?
Rewatched after many, many years, 16 Candles. So Carly had not seen 16 Candles.
Ever. Nice.
And so we do this little thing, like I put sort of a pick from a hat situation, and I put a bunch of directors in it. I use this app called CLZ Movies. It's a paid app, but it's a great thing for anybody who has a large library, particularly a physical library, because then when I'm out and about, I can reference it and see like what I have and make sure I don't have it again or buy it again or whatever. So she picked John Hughes the other day, and we've realized that she only saw Breakfast Club in her John Hughes viewing frame. Everybody has one, I think. Everybody everybody stops the world and melts with John Hughes at some point to watch all those movies. And I thought that I had seen 16 Candles many more times than I have. And I think that if I were to like rank the high school like Brat Pack shit, like I watched Breakfast Club a lot more than I watched Weird Science, which I watched a lot more than 16 Candles. It was great. Like it's very fun. It's paced really well. It feels like some of those like 80s teen novels, like young adult novels. Like John Hughes writes a female character from that time period pretty well. Like it doesn't seem out of the realm, you know, like for him to have like written that. Again, I'm not from, I didn't go to high school in the 80s, but at the same time, like it fictionalizes but also evokes like a really solid emotion.
I feel like that's the chicken and the egg, though. You know, it's like, was 80s high school really like a John Hughes movie, or is John Hughes the architect of what we culturally believe 80s high school is like?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Here's the thing, that if I understand this correctly, and I could be completely wrong about this, right? But first of all, 16 Candles was his directorial debut, which is insane. Yeah. But I believe his intentions was for Breakfast Club to be his directorial debut. And then he had a real like muse type thing with Molly Ringwald, where I believe that I think the way I understood it was that she came in to audition for Breakfast Club and he wanted her for that role. And they're like, she's not a name. And he essentially was like, I am going to make her famous in 1 year so that you will let her be in the, like, essentially, I feel like what I'm trying to say is that I feel like 16 Candles was not only his directorial debut, but like something he threw together very quickly in order to get to do the way he wanted to do Breakfast Club, which makes it all, it, it, the amount of output that he did in the very short period that he was like actively making films is unbelievable. 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, Uncle Buck, and Curly Sue. That's it.
Wow.
Those are the only things that he directed, but like,
wow.
And then he also went on to write National Lampoon Vacation. He wrote Mr. Mom. He wrote Pretty in Pink. He wrote Some Kind of Wonderful. He wrote The Great Outdoors. He wrote Christmas Vacation. He wrote Home Alone. And he wrote Beethoven. And then after that, like, I think I've talked about this before, John Candy dies. He decides he's never going to work in Hollywood That's again. Right. He still gets, like, writer's credit for stuff like Home Alone 2 because it's characters based on the characters of, based on the whatever of. But really, the only other stuff that he did was, like, he apparently came up with the storyline for Made in Manhattan and Drillbit Taylor. Such a brilliant mind. If you ever get a chance to read the book about him, Don't You Forget About Me. It's just literally a collection of essays that different filmmakers wrote about his influence on their filmmaking. And it's got, like, an essay from Molly Ringwald in there. Like, it's very touching, and it really does seem like, in a time where you could have a filmmaker who's in his 30s and 40s making a lot of teen-centric films that could get into, like, some really gnarly backstories, like, every actor who worked with him just kind of said, like, he just wanted to get it as close to right as possible. Like, he didn't want it to be an adult's version of adolescence. He wanted it to be adolescence versions of adolescence, so he would, like, let them in the writer's room essentially to help guide their characters and help, like, make it feel authentic, which is,
that's amazing. I mean, that goes a long way to emphasize the importance of collaboration in that stuff. Like, it's obviously it's vision, it's John Hughes's vision, but to allow that collaboration and to allow that guidance from the people that you're working with and the output in which he's doing that too. Like, there was not a miss really on that list that you listed of films that he wrote, directed, or both. There's no misses from that. It's just, it was cool. It was cool to watch it as his debut, directorial debut. You know, we picked the director at random, and then we picked the movie at random, and it just felt, it was really cool that that happens to be the first one that we pick. Carly and I we really enjoyed it. I didn't remember, like, the story, really. I didn't, you know, so it's cool to go back into it.
It's a wild PG, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you got boobs in the beginning, you got fuck in the beginning.
You got hard F-bombs, both fuck and the other one, and just, like...
Yeah, if you're, like, hanging out with your kids and you're like, hey, let's put on this PG 16 candles.
Let's not.
Maybe pump the brakes. Yeah, let's... Don't do that.
Suggestion is don't. A lot of fun, though.
That was Critters 4 from 1992, as picked by me. Next week, we'll be back with even more picks, so come check that shit out. Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.